Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith podcast. I am your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about how they are using their unique gifts and talents in their specific context and season of life. How did they come to know their gifts? What challenges are they facing as they serve? And what are they learning that can help us where we are? These are the questions my guests are helping us answer this season, and my prayer for you is that by listening, you are encouraged, challenged, and equipped to step out by faith using your particular gifts for God's glory. This episode is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of Five Things to Pray for Your Kids, a book by Melissa Kruger, where she takes us back to the Bible to show us what God's will for children is, so we can pray in line with that. She selects 21 key areas of spiritual growth and character development, and for each one, there are five short prayer prompts drawn straight from the Bible. For more information about this wonderful book by my friend Melissa Kruger, Five Things to Pray for Your Kids, go to thegoodbook.com. Friends, in the last episode, Caroline Cobb shared how she's using her creative and artistic talents to serve the Lord, and I hope you've had a chance to listen to some of her music since then. On today's episode, I've invited Christy Purifoy to share about her ministry of what she calls placemaking, which she's written about in her book, Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. You may be wondering what placemaking actually is, and I'm so glad you asked. Christy shares how placemaking is so much more than decorating or entertaining or hospitality, but is a way of cultivating a sense of home and place in a way that loves God and our neighbors. Christy has lived in city high-rise buildings, dorm rooms, apartments, and now a farmhouse with her family. And in each place, she's learned more of what it means to cultivate beauty. I asked her why beauty isn't frivolous, because doesn't it sometimes feel that way? And also, what can we do if we are discontent where we live, or we're nervous to open up our spaces to others? You're going to love this conversation today and find it so helpful. So friends, here is my conversation with Christy Purifoy. I'm so excited to welcome Christy Purifoy to the By Faith podcast today. Welcome, Christy.
Oh, thank you, Christine. It is so, so good to be here with you.
I cannot wait to hear more of your story. I have checked you out online, and I'm excited about this new book you have coming out. So I would love first, though, for you to tell us about you and your family.
Sure. Well, I'm a wife. I'm a mom. I have four kids, two girls and two boys, and we live in an old red brick farmhouse in southeastern Pennsylvania, so not too far from Philadelphia. I'm a writer. I'm a gardener, and I call myself a placemaker, and that's what this book is all about.
Yeah. Well, I want to know what you mean by that word, because I have an idea in my mind, but I want to know what you think. What does placemaker mean?
Right. Isn't that a great word? I feel like right away it stirs up ideas in people, and I think that's great. So if someone else has ideas about what that means, go with it. But I think what I mean when I say placemaker is I really wanted a term that was bigger than a word like homemaker, sort of encompassed the idea of keeping a home and keeping a place. But I wanted a word that could be for men or women. It could be for people who work outside the home or inside the home, whatever their working life looks like. And placemaking for me is all about loving a place well and sinking your roots deep into the soil, whether you're going to live there for 6 months or 6 years or maybe six decades. However long you're going to be there, I think we can all be placemakers as we love the places that God has made before us and as we partner with Him to take care of those places and shape them and make them more beautiful and more welcoming for other people.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. So how are you specifically doing that? I'm trying to envision, what does that look like for you in your red brick farmhouse in Pennsylvania?
Exactly. Well, and I'll tell you, it looks like one thing today in this old farmhouse, but it has looked like a lot of different things over the years. My husband, Jonathan, and I have lived in many different places. We have lived in city high-rise apartments. I can remember living in dorm rooms. We lived in apartment buildings together, and now we live in this old farmhouse. So what that means for us is a lot of gardening, a lot of just opening the door to guests. So the nice thing about an old house is it has a lot of extra bedrooms, and we love to fill up those bedrooms with friends and even strangers, it's really important to us that we just be a place where if we hear of someone who just needs a place to get away, to rest, maybe have a personal retreat, it is so much fun for me to prep this place and these rooms for them and create a place where they can find that peace and that rest. And so really it's just about being intentional and careful. And that can happen whether you're in an old farmhouse or, you know, a studio apartment, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Have you always kind of had that heart for cultivating beauty and place, or how did this come about in your own life?
Yeah, I think I have. I mean, I can look back. I think my father did this before me. He was a gardener. He worked in ministry, but the house was really a hobby of his. I can remember him picking out wallpaper for the front hall. I can remember him building like the back deck. He built a little playhouse for me and my sisters. He grew roses. And at that time growing up, I never would have guessed that I would follow in his footsteps. But I think all of that really did sink in and give me a vision for what home could be and how you can share your home with other people. Home wasn't just for us and you know, the immediate family, but it was for lots of other people. And that was a really great example that, I got to witness in his life. So actually the book Placemaker is dedicated to my dad.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Those are things I don't think you appreciate whenever you're little, whenever you're younger, you're just like, go, go, go. And I want to grow up and be these things and achieve these things. And then you see your parents a little differently when you become an adult, right? And you see, oh, my dad was doing this in my life and I didn't even appreciate it.
Yes, it's so true. And I was actually really in the act of writing these stories and sort of thinking back to my past that it really became more clear to me that this was a part of my family heritage that I hadn't really recognized that before. And telling the stories, that became much more clear. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a natural bent for me for a long time. But in writing this book, my goal was really to inspire people, whether it's your natural bent or not, whether you're a homebody or a world traveler, whether picking out wallpaper sounds fun or like a nightmare, whoever you are, I think we all have this longing for home and we have this longing for places of peace, places of comfort, places where we can rest. And so even if it's not your natural bent, I think leaning into that, giving that more space in your life. And maybe it's also just learning how to receive that. Maybe there are other people who are creating those kinds of places. And I think as a placemaker myself, I can't do this work unless people are willing to come and receive the place that I've created. And I also, you know, there's special places in this area where I live, where I go and I receive the beauty and the peace that others have, sown into that soil. So, sometimes it's the doing of it and sometimes it's just the being blessed by it and the receiving it. But I hope the book at least helps people to begin to see it like, oh, there is this thing. Our God cares for places and loves places and we're made in his image and we can do that too.
Why do you think that that's so important for us to do? When you talk about home and this longing we have for home, why is it important for us to cultivate those things?
I think it's because these things have their roots in heaven. They have their roots in the kingdom of heaven. They have their roots in like the ultimate eternal things. And so when we make space for them today, it's a way of making room for God's kingdom. It's a way of making room for heaven on earth. And that sounds super grand, right?
Yeah.
I am just talking about, sitting around the table together or maybe growing some roses in the backyard. And that's kind of the amazing thing to me that it can be in these super ordinary, small, humble ways that heaven becomes more visible here on earth. And God's glory is able, we read in Psalms like that his glory might dwell in the land. And I think placemaking is a way of making space for God's glory to really be visible in our midst. Mm-hmm. So it's both small and humble and also pretty big.
Mm-hmm. I want to wrap my mind around how I can make sure that if I'm placemaking, that it's not from a selfish perspective. It's not about me, but I love how you talked earlier about that it's for others, that you're welcoming them into your space and your place, and it's for their profit and their good. how can we distinguish that between the selfish placemaking and selfless placemaking?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I feel like that really is, that's the work of a lifetime in some ways. I mean, that's so much about growing and maturing in Christ and becoming more like Christ. And it's been a process for me. And that was a big part of the stories I tell in this book, is that in the early days, my placemaking often was really selfish. And it was prideful as well. It was this sense of, I know what's best. I know what other people want. I know what this place needs. I do a lot of, I actually tell a lot of stories about nature and trees. And so each chapter is centered around a particular tree that grew in one of the places where we lived. And one thing that I learned from the trees is that quite often nature and the places that God has made, they're actually better off without our intervention. And that was very humbling for me to discover, because especially as a gardener, I think, oh, I can just go in and make any place better. And so it's been a humbling process to realize that that often I make mistakes. I do things badly. I don't understand what people really need or what a place is really about. And so, but I think if we approach it all with humility, if we approach it all just with love, hey, I'm doing this because I love other people and I love this place that where God has you know, set me, then I think that's a good foundation. And then really just knowing we will do it badly. We will make mistakes. But if that's our foundation, that foundation of love and humility, then we're at least off to a good start, I think.
That's, I think, especially a good word for thinking about cultivating within our community, not just our home, but
yes,
our community. Do you have thoughts, yes, about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think placemaking, it might in the smallest kernel of it be about what's happening in our own kitchen, but then it's about our neighborhood, our town, or our city. A really transformative experience for me was the 10 years that I spent living in Chicago on the South Side, in very close proximity with my neighbors and my community. And oh my goodness, I'm so grateful for those years. I learned so much. And I think in a space like that, it's maybe a little bit easier to recognize that the way we take care of, say, our own front door, our own front stoop, implicates a lot of other people. It's easier maybe in the country or the suburbs to think that we are less interdependent than we are. But we're like the trees in the forest, right? We are all in this together. No man is an island and all of that. And so placemaking, while it might have its heart in the home, it is ultimately, I think, it's something that encompasses the whole earth, the whole globe, the whole world that God so loved, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a great point.
So how did you see that when you were living in Chicago? You know, what does taking care of your front stoop mean to your neighbors and your community?
Yeah, you know, one thing is that in a place like that, so many of the buildings, the sidewalks, the streets, they're so old. They've been there a long time. And so it's much harder to be under this illusion of, this place is all about me, because you come into a place that has been so clearly shaped by many generations before. Mm-hmm. And then it's just also, I think, in the dynamics of how you often live in the city. So we owned a condo that was in a building that had six condos or six apartments together. So we owned our own little portion of it, but then we jointly owned the whole building. So we made decisions together about when it was time to put a new roof on the building, or, you know, what temperature to set our boiler at. And those are really important.
Yeah.
That you're just making with your neighbors. And so I really think a big part of placemaking is being a good neighbor. And that's something wherever we live, we all have neighbors. But in the city, we live really, tightly with those neighbors. I became a gardener in Chicago, and I did that through a community garden. We would rent like a little, what was it, like 10 by 10 feet, maybe just a little plot on a vacant city lot. And garden side by side. And that meant that you were there, sure, you were growing your own little tomatoes, but you were also keeping an eye on your neighbor's tomatoes. And I think, there's parallels to all the different ways we live, but the lessons I learned in the city were, I feel like, pretty intensive lessons about placemaking and being a good neighbor and so on.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm thinking Chicago is an interesting place to start gardening.
Right? Yeah, again,
the winter seems, I mean, I've never lived in Chicago, but it seems like it'd be really long and really hard to grow good tomatoes.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. And I failed more than I succeeded. And at a certain point, we lived in a little apartment that had a back, we had no yard, but we had a little back patio. And that I started, you know, with window boxes and things like that. So it's not it. And it, you know, we were like four stories up and the wind would blow and not ideal gardening conditions, but maybe also I think in the city we wanted it more. We needed it more. I needed it more. There was so much noise and concrete all around. And it was that desire, I think, that the city really fueled that probably spurred me on.
Is that why you started? Because you were around concrete so much that you wanted?
I think so. I think so. You appreciate trees, for example, much more when there's just the one tree maybe across the street from your building that you get to watch change with the seasons. And mm-hmm. you know, now I live in a place with just an absolute abundance of trees. But I think those years of not having so much probably did, yeah, shape my perspective.
Mm-hmm. So how did y'all end up in Pennsylvania then?
So we moved from Chicago to Florida. And that was a very hard move for us because we no longer lived around the seasons. And we learned in Florida how important the shifting seasons were for us. And so during those years in Florida, the dream of just going back to the seasons, living in a way that was somehow more rooted with the ground under our feet, it was not having those things that really made us realize how much they meant to us. I started to realize that I really was a homebody. But one thing about Florida is that, you know, it's always kind of the same outside. It's always hot and sunny for the most part. And I started to realize that as a homebody, I'd love to live somewhere where the world almost changes around me. Now that I live in Pennsylvania, the different seasons, the world is sort of always shifting around me. So I think if I had stayed in Florida, I would have needed to just travel more maybe. But in Pennsylvania, I get to stay home and watch things just change around me. So yeah, that's really where our farmhouse dream began to grow. And that was a dream of hospitality. It was a dream of gardening. It was a dream of really caring for a place. And it was quite a faith journey to get from there to here. It hasn't been easy. But I think having a vision like that is, it really carries you through the lean times, the hard times, the winter seasons. And we're still watching the vision being realized. We haven't arrived yet.
How long have y'all lived there?
We've been there, we've been here 6 years. And, you know, so it's interesting. When we moved here 6 years, it was a kind of beginning and an end. It, you know, we had arrived, but we were also arriving at the beginning of something new. And that's the journey that we've been on for 6 years, slowly. Restoring this place, building the gardens, welcoming people. We recently built a black barn. Actually, we had a kind of Amish barn raising, and some local Amish barn builders came and built this barn for us. And we've started hosting larger gatherings under those barn beams. And that too is just another part of the dream slowly being realized. And it's exciting to see.
So interesting. I'm wondering for people who, let's say they are in an apartment in Chicago or, mm-hmm. you know, they don't really have the financial means to, maybe they would love to, they have a dream in mind of how they would love to live, but that's maybe not possible for them. How could you encourage them in their Chicago apartment or in their Florida no seasons? How can we cultivate a sense of place and use what we have?
Oh, such a good question. Yes. And that really is just near and dear to my heart, because I think it often if we aim for those big expensive things, it can backfire. So placemaking is not about granite countertops or, you know, new flooring in your kitchen or even owning your own home. It's not about those things. I think it really emerges in the smallest touches, and it's the small things that help others really see a place and experience a place. So what am I talking about? I tell a story in the book about in Chicago, the winters are so long, And I was so starved for green grass and green growing things that I actually started growing grass seed on the windowsill, like in old yogurt containers.
And it desperate was, when you when you're doing that.
Desperate. And I would snip it with scissors, and then it would smell all like fresh green grass, and I would you know, rub my hands over it. So it might be something kind of crazy like that, or you know, it's lighting a candle at dinner time. It's you know, taking the time to maybe set out some cloth napkins that you know you picked up at the thrift store. It is the smallest possible things, but the things that it really is those things that I think fill a home with peace. It's, you know, it's quiet. It's turning off the TV and, you know, looking at, you know, your friend or your neighbor, you know, face to face. And so it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be complicated. And in fact, those things can often get in the way of, you know, the kind of community and, you know, loving relationships that we can have in our places when we take time to take care of them. So, yeah, lots of stories of the little things in Placemaker.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because what you're saying is this is a way of loving God and reflecting back to Him who He is. And this is a way of loving people.
Exactly.
And however you can do that, whether it is grass on the windowsill that your family can enjoy, or a special napkin or a candle.
Yeah.
People, you're saying you're inviting people into relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just a matter of remembering that places are a part of that. You know, we're maybe as Christians, we're primed to think about our neighbor, I think about community, we're a part of the church, but we forget that we interact with people, we relate to people, we even relate to God in places. Always we are somewhere. And so to give a little thought to that where can really be transformative within those relationships. And it can be a way of loving those people. When I've prepared a place for someone and they enter that place and they see even just the small things that I've done that sort of said, hey, I was expecting you. I was looking forward to having you here. That really communicates. I mean, we know it does, right? We know what that feels like when someone welcomes us to their home in that way or to their space in that way. So that's something we can do in our homes. It's something we can do in our churches. We can think about maybe what's happening when someone walks in the front door of our church. And so I think even for those who, you know, maybe are making those decisions for churches, there can be a kind of placemaking that happens there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even not even thinking about physical things, but the way we interact with people and the way we speak to them and see them and welcome them and mm-hmm. hug them and, you know, inviting them to sit with us yeah. and things like that. This is what you're describing is yeah. what I think of a biblical hospitality.
Yes.
I think yes. we get confused, that word hospitality, we get real confused about that. Mm-hmm. And so I would love for you to help us to understand even more. I mean, you kind of have already started, but the difference between hospitality and mm-hmm. I think of like Martha Stewart, you know.
Right,
sometimes
right.
Sometimes we think that versus biblical hospitality.
Yes. Yeah, I think hospitality, you know, so it's a difference between hospitality and entertaining, right? Mm-hmm. So entertaining might be about impressing someone or proving to others how much you have or how talented you are. And, you know, we're often tempted in that direction. It's, you know, it feels good when people admire us, but placemaking and hospitality is not that at all. And hospitality is a word I use a lot. That's a big part of placemaking. I think one thing that the word placemaking helps me to see hospitality a little bit differently. Like here's one example. So I'm an introvert, extreme introvert. And hospitality, that word can often make me nervous, even though I love being around people and I love having people in my home. I also know that hospitality can be quite draining because it involves that often that social interaction. Well, when I think about placemaking, it helps me remember that a part of my hospitality is the work I do alone before anyone shows up in my space. So when I am out gardening, when I'm tending flowers that later I will cut and bring in the house and maybe put in a guest bedroom or something, that's a part of my placemaking. And that's a way of loving other people. Even though in that moment, I'm by myself. If I'm cleaning my house or if I'm cooking, I might be alone in my kitchen, and that feels really good to me as an introvert. It's restorative, you know, restores my energy. But still, that work, that placemaking work, is a part of the hospitality I show, and it's always geared toward those who will, you know, whether it's my children who come in the afternoon from school and now there's something for them, or it's, you know, guests or people who are visiting or neighbors who are dropping by. So placemaking, I think, just expands my view of what hospitality can be and what it encompasses, and how it's something that we can offer, whether we are natural party people and extroverts, or whether you're like me and you need a lot of alone time too. So I always say, like, placemaking is for men and women, it's for introverts, it's for extroverts, it's for, you know, how we interact with others, and it's for the work that we do before we're in the company of others.
Mm-hmm. That is a great way of looking at it. I'm an introvert as well. So, taking the pressure off a little bit, but that's good. I love how we're talking about beauty. We're just talking about adding beauty to the world, because our God is beautiful and He makes things beautiful, and we are invited to do the same. But I think we get this so wrong sometimes as Christians, or at least I grew up, maybe this is just me and my personality, but I grew up kind of feeling like this stuff is frivolous. Like, it's a waste for me to focus on growing flowers and cutting them and putting them in the guest room, and they're going to die in 2 days, you know? So why is it not frivolous for us to consider beauty and cultivating beauty?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked, because that's been a lifelong struggle for me. And even more recently, as I have slowly started growing more flowers and fewer vegetables, which it was hard for me at first, right? Because I feel like, well, hey, at least like tomatoes and potatoes and green beans, I can justify that because it puts food on the table. But flowers, buckets and buckets of flowers, like, how do I even defend that? The time it takes and the money it requires and so on. But I think beauty is, it's one of the languages God uses to speak to us. It is absolutely a part of who He is and how He's made us and this creation, you know, that this earth that He has made. And so when we participate in that by cultivating beauty, we are participating in something that that God loves and a place where God meets us. I think it's a way, you know, when we add beauty into the world, again, it's that, you know, that His glory may dwell on the land. We are helping others to see what we see. Like, we know how beautiful God is, and we understand that all the beauty around us is of His making, and we get to be a part of that. So I think, you know, I'm learning just how important it is. I'm learning that it's not this extra thing, but it is, it's really integral to who God is and how He relates to us. And I think we miss out on a lot, and actually probably miss out on some really essential things if we are always kind of pushing it to the bottom of the list or pushing it to the edges of our life.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think it may be even becoming more important in this time of technology and how we, what we look at and what we give our time and energy and our hearts to. It's often very man-made, very shallow, and we need this depth and this beauty to remind us of who God is, more so than ever, I think.
Oh my goodness, you're so right. I was just reading something recently that reminded me how, you know, ancient people, all the people that we read about in Scripture, would have walked out every night and just and been underneath just this pressing weight of incredible stars and, you know, the Milky Way and so on. And those are things that we hardly ever see anymore. And so right there is this deficit of God-given beauty that we don't even realize we're missing out on. And so we may not be able to, you know, fully restore, you know, our culture and our society but to that old way and get rid of all the light pollution and so on. But hey, we can light a candle every night at dinner. We can do that. And that little humble candle is connected to those stars and to the moon and so on. And in that way, it's connected to the beauty that God has made. So you're right, I think, in recognizing that we've lost some significant things, but we can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever read Edith Schaefer's book? The hidden art of homemaking, right?
I have. That's a great example. I love what she has to say in that book.
I don't love the title of that book.
No. See, that's why I went with Placemaker.
Yeah, I feel like it would probably cause some people to not even pick it up that should. It doesn't give a good idea of what the book is about, but mm-hmm. I love how she goes through different types of creativity and talks about how we can use those just in everyday ways. Like if you're a good artist, that you can draw pictures for your child during the sermon to help them understand what is being talked about. And that's a creative way that is intriguing to a child that can turn them on to God's beauty. And she kind of goes through lots of different examples of that. And I never thought of that before when I read that book.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel
it's so true. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's kind of what you're going for with your book.
It is. And it really is. Like, whatever your gifts or talents are, you know, maybe you won't ever be a gardener, and that's fine. But maybe you're a musician, and the voice you bring to a gathering, I mean, talk about that. I wish so much that I could sing or play the piano because the beauty of music, or maybe you can draw, maybe it's art, maybe it's just the way you can have a conversation, whatever it is. I think we all have some way to contribute beauty to the world and to our gatherings with others. And yeah, to think creatively about what that might be is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. So I would love to know from you, since you lived in several lots of different places, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've also kind of met up with some discontent in certain places. So how can we, you know, maybe there's somebody listening who's like, I just don't love where I live. I don't, my heart for my community is just kind of apathetic, and I don't really know what God has me here for. What are some lessons that you have learned about embracing where you are, where God has placed you, that might help us?
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. That's the question, right? And I have been there, and I will not sugarcoat how hard that is. I have lived in places where I just longed to put down roots, but it felt like I was standing on concrete, and I couldn't make a dent. My roots just could not sink. And I felt like I was living a kind of super on the surface of life. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard way to live. And we might experience that a lot relationally. Maybe we can't find a church, or we're just not connecting with our neighbors, or we just don't have any friends. I've lived through some seasons that were very lonely. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard. And I think we... Some of it is maybe learning to live with the tension of saying, you know, I don't have to rename this hard thing as easy. I don't have to say that this ugly thing is beautiful. It isn't. I feel like I'm living on concrete, and that's not beautiful. But I'm here, and God hasn't called me on yet. And while I might still hope and pray that, you know, maybe either I'll be called onto a new place, or new relationships will start to grow in this particular place, we can say, I think, with God's help, I'm here now, and God, you are here too. And every place where you are has something. Every place has something. I tell some stories in the book about a period of time where we were living in a little East Texas town, and there were some great things about that place, but there's some really ugly things. There's some really hard things. Some of it was some ugly social things we encountered. There were even literally in the environment, there was a nearby factory that was pretty noxious in its fumes that it put out. So, you know, there was just some different hard things about that place. But the time I spent there, and especially with the relationships that I made there, proved to me by the end that there is something beautiful. There's something blessed by God in every place where his people dwell. Sometimes it's just praying for eyes to see,
mm-hmm.
just eyes to see, and then focusing on those, you know, they may be small, but those little beauties, those little grace notes, even while maybe a big portion of our heart is longing for something new and what's next. And oh my goodness, praise God, we're following this God who is always making everything new, even those places that feel like hard concrete. Even those places are being made new, and we can participate in that.
Yeah, that's great. You write in your book that you think we all are gardeners in some way. I'm not a gardener, but I've always wanted to be. I don't even know where to start. And I don't know that I have the patience to do it, but talking to you kind of makes me want to actually do it. But why do you think, even for me, who I'm not a gardener, physical gardener of things, mm-hmm. You're saying I'm a gardener.
That's true. And it's true. I'm not saying that you'll ever grow a tomato. Maybe you won't. maybe you'll never go grass seed on your, on your windowsill, but we are all tending something. We are all keeping something. We are all caring for something. Maybe it's young children. Maybe we have young children at home. Maybe it's a ministry that God has called us to. Maybe it's a church. It might be all kinds of different things, but the work of gardening is that day in, day out, making new, pulling out the weeds, sowing the seeds, persisting in faithfulness through the winter when it feels like, oh, nothing is happening and everything has died, but sticking with it and looking forward to spring, doing what you can to prepare for spring. The things that I have learned in the garden about what it's like to live through the four seasons, what it's like to participate in those cycles of death and rebirth, those matter for all of us, no matter what we are doing. But I will say also, I do hope for people who read the book who maybe have never considered gardening or maybe don't give a lot of time or attention to the natural world, I do hope that my stories of flowers and especially all the trees will at the very least help more people to just see what's all around them. And that can be enough. You don't have to plant the seeds to appreciate, what's growing all around you.
That's so good. Just one more question. I'm thinking for people who are listening, who you are speaking to their heart. I mean, you are describing their loves, and maybe they're like me and they thought, oh, that's frivolous. I could never give my attention to that. I should be fill in the blank instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say to them about their fears of just kind of taking a step, whether it is, I'm going to open my home up for the first time ever, or I'm going to start gardening, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They really have an idea even that's kind of moving around in their head about how they want to love people in a certain way using this gift. What would you say to them to encourage them?
I think I would say focus small, pay attention to the little things. These big extraordinary dreams, these big extraordinary stories that we want to live, don't happen in big extraordinary gestures and moments for the most part. They happen when we sense some small invitation and we say, okay, yes, maybe I'll try. And we take a little step in that direction. So, sometimes I think people can feel discouraged, like, well, I only have these little opportunities, or all I did was, invite a few friends over for tea, or, what difference does that make? But it's all these little things added together day after day, season after season, that when you look back, you realize something beautiful, something big has grown. But we don't necessarily need to aim at the big thing, right? We can just be faithful in the small things. And I think the garden, again, is a good example for that, because, we can look at a finished garden, someone else's masterpiece, and we see so much complexity and so much beauty. And we think, I could never do that. But we forget that it was just one seed, and then one more seed, and then watering those seeds. And every garden begins that way. So just look for the next small, right, beautiful thing, and then move in that direction.
I can't wait to read your book. This gets me excited. I want to read it.
Thank you so much. So fun to tell you about it.
Tell us the name of the book, the whole name, and when it's coming out.
Sure. The book is called Placemaker, Cultivating Places of Comfort, Beauty, and Peace. And it comes out from Zondervan in March 2019. I think the actual day is March 12th.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, absolutely. It's been wonderful to chat.
Friends, it just so happens that Christy's book, Placemaker, releases into the world today. Happy release day, Christy. You can grab your copy of the book wherever books are sold. I've linked to a few online stores in the show notes today to make it easy for you. Friends, join me next week as I speak with my friend, Lori McDaniel. I cannot tell you how much I love Lori, and as soon as I recorded this conversation, I wanted to immediately share it with you. Lori and I talk about the gift of leadership, how she acknowledged to herself that she was a leader, and what leadership looks like for women in a complementarian church context. It is so good. So meet me back here next week for this really important conversation. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.